everyone. Welcome back to her podcast. As I say every week, I realize that I say every week, I'm super excited to be here with you guys, but it's true every single week. And we are continuing talking about the Enneagram. This might be my last episode on the Enneagram for a while. So I don't know how you guys feel about that, but DM me, email me. You can email me through VanessaGraciaCruz.com and let me know if you want more content on the Enneagram. But I really wanted to finish with a bang. So I brought with me, this is my friend Dee Petrozelli, who is two things. Number one, you are the most knowledgeable, one of the most knowledgeable people about the Enneagram that I know. And number two, you were my very first bestie in from high school. Yeah. We were high school best friends, and now it's many, many years after high school. We don't have to say how many, but and we're still friends, and we share this love for the Enneagram, and not just a love for the Enneagram on a superficial level, which is what I want to talk about today, but the love for the Enneagram and all the nuances and all the details of the Enneagram, because the Enneagram is a process. Yeah. It's a journey. It sounds a little bit maybe, you know, spiritual or mystical to say it that way. But I think we're really missing the point of the Enneagram if we just want to do it quickly and get it out of the way. The point is to identify who we are, how we got to be that way. What are the things that hurt us? What are the things that made an impact on our life that make us the way we are? And how is that affecting how we deal with our problems, our spiritual life, our marriages? So we're going to get into all of that. And today's episode is about how to find your Enneagram type. Because with all of these episodes that I've been doing, we've shown the ones that we've done an episode or, you know, we've showed in some aspect every single number on the Enneagram. And I've gotten so many people telling me, I watched your episode on the six. I think I'm a six, but I'm not sure because I'm not exactly like Rico. Or they'll be like, but I might be an eight. I identify a little bit with Rue. Or sometimes they'll tell me, I think I'm an eight, but I do not relate to Rue at all. And I think one very important thing we're going to talk today about how to find your Enneagram type. But before that, I'll tell you one key way to not find your Enneagram type is don't look at another person of the type and say, I'm just not like that person. Mm-hmm. Because it comes down to the iceberg example. You know, if you guys have ever seen, it's like one of those posters that's in almost every classroom across the United States where it's like the top is the iceberg and then you'll see the ocean and you'll see that the iceberg is so much bigger than what you see on top, and that is every single person that you know. So we can have an episode with Rue, my brother, in the 8 episode, or we can have an episode with Janessa, and we're talking for 15-20 minutes to each person. You know, that is not the depth of who they are. It will give you maybe a little idea of like, wow, you know, the point of that was, so you see the 6, you see the 2, you see the 3, and you say, wow, maybe I should check out that number. Like the idea was to point people in the right direction, but it certainly wasn't to give you the idea that if, you know, if you don't relate to Rico, then you can't be a 6. Because one thing that we're going to speak about today is the Enneagram has many nuances. You know, it's not a personality test, which is what I tell people. It is an identifier of your motivations, which with that, I'm going to get into our first point. Way number one to not find your Enneagram number. Do not take a test. You know what's funny, too? I say this almost every episode of my podcast, and I'll still get people DMing me.
We'll take a test.
No shade. You know, I'm not angry about it or anything, but I still will get people DMing me saying, you know, I'm this. And then here's another thing. The test will usually give you 3 numbers that you could be, and sometimes people don't even read that in depth. So they'll text me and they'll say, I am a, you know, I don't want to put anybody out there, but they'll say, I'm a 2 and a 5. And I'm like, wow, 2 and 5s have no lines, no wings. It is impossible to be a 2 and a 5 at the same time.
Right.
And that's the reason why, because the test is going to point you in a direction, which in a way can be good, but it is almost always wrong. Mm-hmm. What I've seen in people is that it's almost always wrong. And here's why. I'm going to give you guys all my speech that I've been giving a lot of you guys in my DMs. I literally take the time and I write this out to the ones that I can. But a test online cannot tell you about the core motivations of your heart. A test online cannot be introspective enough to tell you what hurt you when you were growing up. The only person who maybe can do that, and sometimes not even, is you. you know, you cannot, and a lot of the reasons why the test comes out wrong is because people, you know, the test will ask a question like, are you prideful, for example, for the two? And I know a lot of twos who do not believe they are prideful until they learn that they're twos and they're confronted with the truth and they say, oh my gosh, I had a pride that was hidden all along. You know, I had an underlying pride, but you're not going to answer that correctly when you're taking a test. You've known about the Enneagram for all of 2 minutes. This is what people normally do. Oh, Vanna said something about the Enneagram. You know, let me look it up really quick. First quiz that comes up, or recommend to me a good test. Some of them even pay money for the test. Mm. And you haven't read about the Enneagram yourself, so you're not answering the questions from a place of knowledge. So I don't know if you can relate to that or have anything to add about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the, I've been studying the Enneagram for a little while, but I think one of the ways when I was starting to get deeper into it, I remember seeing one of your stories and you were like, don't take a test. And I was like, okay, so I'm not going to take a test, even if out of curiosity. I wanted to make sure that, you know, my reason for wanting to take the test was to just really go deeper, like you said, into the journey that I've been on for a few years now. And so I think that what I wanted to do was really just become familiar with each type. And like you said, you can't just, it can't tell you who you are. You know you best.
Yes.
And so there's no one that can tell you what your fears are, what your motivations are, better than you. You know, and I think that when we do the work and sit with God and ask him questions and why did I react that way? Why did I do this? We start to understand a little bit deeper into why we have certain tendencies, certain behavior patterns. And so that's the best way really to become familiar. And honestly, in that journey, it wasn't just about myself. It was also wanting to get to know other types, other people. How can I serve them better? How do they receive love? And so I think that in that journey, I really just resonated when you said, don't take a test. I was like, okay, I'm not going to take a test. I'm going to just become familiar and see each type. And, you know, within each type, there's subtypes also, which is why they can, everyone can look different, even within the same number, you know.
So. And something, I love something that you said. You said, you got to do the work. You got to do the work of sitting alone with God. You have to do the work of sitting there and saying, God, am I prideful? Am I vain?
Right.
There are so many things. You know, the psalmist said, Lord, forgive me for my sins and forgive me even for the sins que me son oculto. So the sins that are hidden from me, hidden in my heart. And I think that's the work of the Enneagram. For me, it was so impacting to learn my blind sides. They were not blind sides that I knew about. Right. It resonated once I saw them jump off the page. I was like, oh my gosh,
that's me.
My hidden motivations are evil. And I think that's why sometimes it's hard to accept your Enneagram type two, type also, because you look at it and you say, I can't be like this. I know that happens a lot with eights.
Yeah.
And we spoke about that in the eight episode. They say, no, I'm not rebellious. I'm not pushy. I'm not a bully. And it's like, you maybe don't think you're a bully.
Right.
But that could be your tendency. Or maybe even you've matured past it in a certain sense, but that could be your tendency. And I think it's that need for introspection, which is why you don't want to just get on it, do a quick test. Or sometimes people tell me, send me something to read, but not something long. And it's like, if you're not willing to read into this, then there's no point in doing it.
Yeah.
Because this is something that you need to read, understand, meditate on, ask yourself the hard questions. And then you have to figure out, once you have all this mess in your hand, like, oh my God, I'm vain, I'm prideful, I'm, you know, I'm lustful, I don't even know what the other things are, you know, I'm depressive, I'm all these things. Now you have to figure out how to heal. So that's why it's called the Enneagram journey, because it's literally a journey that you're going on. And like Dee said, that's what I recommend. I recommend reading about every type, finding a good book, even a good website at times. There's lots of good YouTube videos to point you in the right direction, rather than saying, I'm going to take this test. And here's something funny that happens too. People will take the test, and then since they took the test and the test told them they were an eight, let's say, everything they read with the bias of that's me. And when you read something with a bias, like when you read something already knowing well, this is what I am. So, yeah, I guess I do this. And that's what happened to me. Mm-hmm. I made the mistake of taking the test. The test told me I was a 2. I didn't know anything yet. I hadn't read a book. I hadn't done anything. I was very new.
Right.
I thought that's what you did. I didn't even take a good test. I took a test on like a cheapy app that was free. Like, at least if you're going to take a test, pay for it, because the cheapy apps are the worst. So I took a test like on a little cheapy app, and it told me I was a 2. Mm. And so looking at the 2 through a lens of, well, the test told me I'm a 2, I just thought I was a 2. Yeah.
And for a couple months. And you're a 3 with a 2 wing, right? So yeah. A lot of similarities.
I have a 2 wing, so it seemed, you know, it seemed decent. But I looked at everything through a 2 lens. So right. I said, okay, you know, I guess I am prideful. I guess I am this. Not realizing that I was not addressing that was not my main sin. Mm-hmm. That was not my main fixation. That was not my core wound. So, and I share this story a lot, when my friend Janessa actually looked into it and said, no, I'm going to read a book. I'm going to go really deep into this, like the one that she is. Mm-hmm. She read the chapter on the 3 and she said, wait, Bonnie, I think this is you. Mm. And when she sent me that screenshot, I share this all the time, I bawled. Mm. I cried because I said, no, this is me. And yeah. I tell people a lot that when you have your wrong Enneagram number, if you see your Enneagram number and you don't feel very seen, like if you don't relate to it, like at a heart level, at a core level, then it still might not be there. Sometimes you have to do some introspection, but if you don't really relate to it, you might not be there, because it is such an emotional thing.
Yeah.
And one thing I appreciate about you, and I want to talk a little bit about next, because I've been going on and on, so passionate about this subject. I want to talk about how you took your time before you decided on a number. So you were between 2 numbers, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I love what you were saying about just being seen, because I think that in order for us to really feel loved, we have to be known first. Mm. And a lot of times we don't want people to see the aspects of us that we don't like, which is either why we find out our type and we fixate on, well, I'm just that way, or not just with Enneagram, but more with personality tests. Well, that's just the way I am, you know, or we see it and then we're in denial and we're like, no, that's not me. And it's because it hurts us to admit that there is something wrong with the way that we are. But that's the whole gospel. It's the condition of the human heart. It's the fact that we are broken, that we are sinful, that without Christ, we are helpless. And so when we come to that realization at a basic level, then we can start on the journey of saying, okay, well, how can I? And this is a tool. I love that you say that in every podcast. The Enneagram is not be it and all. It's just a tool that we use, just like the gym is a tool that we use to become physically fit and strong. The Enneagram is a tool to help us become aware so that we can be emotionally healthy, so that we can be healed, so that we can serve better, so that we can love others better, so we can be better brothers and sisters in Christ, you know? And I think that for me, it's been a few years now, maybe 3 or maybe a little bit more so years, where I really just saw tendencies and patterns in my life where I knew that if I didn't put an end to it, they were going to continue, you know, generationally from my parents, grandparents, whoever it came. If I continued to live my life the same way that I had been living, then that was going to carry on to not just everyone that would come after me, but everyone around me would be impacted by that. Yeah. And so a few years ago, I think that's one of the reasons why I was back and forth. I was back and forth between the 7 and the 8, just because my personality, I have a little bit of both. And I think one of the reasons it was hardest for me to sit on one, it's because I had already started on a journey of emotional healing. So a lot of the things that I saw, I think I'm more on the type 8. I'm pretty sure I'm a type 8. I say that cautiously because I haven't for sure, you know, landed on it. But when I saw a lot of tendencies, I was like, well, no, I don't think so. But then I started looking back at my whole life and realizing, no, yes, that is me. Mm-hmm. I do those things. But because I had sat with the Lord, and that's why this is just a tool. I had already sat with the Lord and asked him, Lord, why do I have a fear of being vulnerable? Why don't I want to let people see me cry? Why don't I, you know, and I sat through many months of this struggle of questions. I love asking God questions. He's not afraid or challenged by our questions. And so when the Enneagram was introduced to me and I started doing a little bit of research, it was like, wow, I can even now take it to a next level of saying, okay, wow, these are things I hadn't even seen. Because there are things that come from revelation, from reading the word. The word is like a mirror that peers into our souls, right? And so that it was an additional tool that I was able to use in conjunction with my time with the Lord to say, okay, how can I be better? How can I be not just physically and spiritually fit, but emotionally fit as well?
Yeah. And I admire your maturity in that, because I think a lot of people, they just want to close a chapter. So they just want to decide. You know, even if they're still planning on reading more about the Enneagram, they're like, I don't want to continue until I know what I am. So they'll go on almost into like a frenzy of, tell me what I am, tell me what I am, like, help me decide. And I always tell people, you don't need to decide today. Like, sometimes people, you know, people figured out that I'm knowledgeable about the Enneagram. So sometimes they'll approach me at church and they'll be like, help me, what am I? And I'm like, I don't know what you are. Yeah, like, or even if I've known them for many years, I'm like, I can't tell you if you are doing everything to seek approval for people. Mm-hmm. You gotta ask God that. I can give you, you know, some pointers. I can tell you there are some things that I would see a nine definitely wouldn't do. Or like, we had this one friend that she didn't want to be an eight. Mm. You know, we discovered later on that the reason why was because her mom would always tell her, "Tú eres tan peleona. You always fight. So she really did not want to be called the challenger, which is something else that I want to talk about in a minute. Yeah. People get really caught up on those nicknames. Oof. You know, they get really caught up. She's like, "So I'm not a challenger. I am not, like, I cannot be a challenger." And I told her, I was like, I can't tell you your exact type. What I can tell you is that you challenge more than the average person. Right. So if your whole thing is based off of you not challenging, and then, you know, I kind of started showing her, like, first of all, you're challenging me right now. Second of all, you can help people find out. Obviously, if you're asking somebody for this type of advice, make sure that they've read at least all the numbers.
Right.
Because that's another thing I've seen. They're like, oh, you know, D told me I was a seven. And I was like, okay, they read a book. Like, why do they think you're a seven? No, well, you know, she read the seven and the two and she said I was a seven. And I was like, well, there's six other numbers, or my math, there's seven other numbers on the Enneagram that you haven't even touched. How do you know another one doesn't fit better?
Yeah.
You know, if you only try on two things, you only read about two numbers, how do you know another one doesn't fit better? And I want to go back to what I was saying before. Don't get caught up in the nicknames.
Right.
Because people do that. Mm. You know, the eight is called the challenger. The nine is called the peacemaker. So, like, there are big misconceptions. Like, I can't be a nine because sometimes I get angry.
Right.
Or I can't be a two. The two is called the helper. They'll say, I can't be a two because I don't help people that much. Mm. And sometimes, first of all, you're wrong. Because sometimes, you know, I've seen a lot of twos that say, I'm not that helpful. And it's really just their inner shame telling them they're not being helpful enough. Wow. And they really are more helpful than anyone else I know. Yeah. And sometimes it's a misconception because, for example, twos go to eight in stress. Mm-hmm. So twos know how to stand up for themselves. Right. Twos can get very loud if they're frustrated. Twos can get twos can apply very strict boundaries when they're pushed to the edge. Yeah. What you want to consider, don't get caught up in the nickname. Don't take a test. Read all of them. And one thing to consider, if you're in between the two numbers or if you think, I can't be this number, look at the core sin.
Right.
Look at the core fixation. So I was telling you a story. I have another friend who she thought she was a three. She's like, I'm a three. I said, you know, I never tell anybody what their number is, but I simply asked her a question. I said, okay, well, the three's main sin and core fixation is vanity. Mm-hmm. I said, is your main sin, if you had to pick of all the things going on in your heart that make you emotionally unhealthy, is vanity one? And this is a person who's probably the most humble person that I know, like most nines are.
Right.
You know, she's very unassuming. She's very accommodating. She's the sweetest. And she was like, no, but I don't like that people don't say I'm a three because I feel like people are saying I'm lazy when they're saying I'm a nine. And I'm like, wait, no, read about the nine.
Right.
There are so many amazing things in each Enneagram number.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people get mixed up because they don't see it that way.
Yeah, yeah. And I think for sure in each number, there's going to be things where you see and you're not super happy that that's what is the case. And there are things that you see and you're like, yeah, I want to be like that. So I know people see the type nine and they say, oh, peacemaker, that's what I want to be. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily mean the nines struggle with slothfulness, with laziness within doing the emotional work, mm-hmm. within analyzing. So it's like every single type is going to have pros and cons. And I think that the foundation of really coming into the Enneagram journey is really coming to the Lord first and accepting love and accepting to be loved as we are, and to say we're not here, because I can say I've been on a journey of healing for years now, and when I look back I'm like, wow, I've come such a long way. But when I look forward I'm like, wow, I've got a long way to go, you know. And so I think it's just being content, being appreciative of where we are today, and saying it's not too late for me to start. Yes. It's not too early for me to start. It is just the right time of doing the work. And how we were talking about, you know, physical fitness also, just like with the gym and with working out, you get what you put in. If you go to the gym once every 6 months, that's the product of what you're going to receive. And just with this, it's the same. It's not something you have to do. But chances are the work that you put in, the reading time that you put in, the you know, what you put in is what you're going to come out of it.
Yeah, and I love that, because I definitely recommend to a lot of people come to me as a pastor. People come to me and say, you know, I'm depressed, I'm sad, I'm grieving, or I'm dealing with a lot of offense. Like, people who are emotionally in turmoil, right. The first thing I tell them is, all right, let's do some emotional work.
Yeah.
And you have two types of people. You have the people who are like, okay, I'll read anything you say, I'll do anything you say, like, I'll meditate, I'll journal, I'll do it all. And then you have the people who are like, but I don't like to read, but I don't like to do this. Right. And there's no shame in that. Like, if that's where you are on your journey, maybe you don't need it that bad. But I will say, if you are in pain, that's like, I tell people, emotions do to your heart what pain does to your physical body. Right. So if you're walking around and let's say your knee is in pain, and every single time you step on it, your knee is in pain. If you do that for long enough, you're going to need surgery in that knee.
Yeah.
You're going to mess up your knee, and you're not only going to mess up that knee, you're going to mess up the other knee, because the other knee is doing double the work supporting that. And that's exactly what happens with your Enneagram type. Right. Your Enneagram type is all about, you had a wound. That wound did not receive attention because you were a child, because you didn't know how, because you're emotionally immature. So you have this wound that didn't receive attention, but you were still using it. You were still walking on it. And your other, the other aspects of your personality overdeveloped to compensate for that wound. So I'll give myself as an example. As a three, our wound was, you're not important unless you're doing something. You're not important unless you are achieving. You're not important unless you're doing something great.
Right.
So in order to cover that wound, the core sin of the three is vanity, which is and it's not a vanity as in, I'm so conceited, I think I'm so beautiful, I think I'm so great. It's a vanity as in an overattention and a fixation on what people think of me.
Right.
Because I thought in my childhood that so many people thought I was a loser. You know, that's what threes receive. They think everybody thinks I'm a loser. So I'm going to work triple as hard just to not look like a loser.
To prove myself, yeah.
Most threes, it's like, I don't even think I'm going to look good. I just want to make sure I don't look as bad as I feel inside.
Right.
And so that's what the personality is. And that's another reason I keep on going back to my favorite phrase. That's another reason why I say don't take a test.
Don't take a test.
Because the test is going to test you on your personality traits.
Right.
And it's not going to test you on that. The test is going to test you on your personality traits, and your personality traits are things that you put on to cover that other wound. And one thing I've learned in my journey of the Enneagram is that your personality is not your whole self.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in my personality, I might be, you know, I'm energetic. I'm, I don't know. I kind of don't like talking about myself in that way. Makes me nervous, but you know what I mean? Like, let's say, or I'll pick you, because it's always easier to talk about a friend than yourself, right? But D is energetic. She's passionate. She's generous. Mm. She is spontaneous. She's one of the funnest and funniest people in the world. But she adapted all of that to cover up inadequacies and feelings that she was feeling. So when you take a test and you say, I'm funny. You take a test and you say, I'm this. And the test, not knowing you, will say, oh, okay, so then you're this. when you're missing a whole chunk of of emotional work.
Yeah.
Right. So tell me a little bit about your struggle and your questioning between the 7 and the 8 and like how it looked in your mind when you were like, but I think I'm a 7 because of this. But then you would call me and you would tell me, but that could be an 8 thing. But that could be. So like, tell me a little bit about the back and forth of that.
So I think that one of the things I always start off with when I share this is, and I love that you said it, the personality that you put on is not who you are. Mm-hmm. The wounds that you receive in childhood are not necessarily realities. They're perceptions.
Yes.
So just because, like you always say in each episode, you had amazing parents who were supportive, who were just very strong. And, you know, and so what you perceived was not necessarily a reality because those things weren't true, but you just felt that they were. So I always like to say that just because we feel a certain way, we act a certain way, that is not who we are. Mm-hmm. Our identity as children of God is that, our identity is redeemed in Christ. We are, mm-hmm. and so I think that that's a basis of, if you're not there yet, if you don't think those things are true about you, start there. Sit with the Lord.
Yes.
Ask Him to shower you with that love so that you can really be grounded in being loved. And I think that makes it a little bit easier, at least for me it was, too. When I heard this, I was like, oh yeah, I think that's me. And there was no shame. There was no, I do have the tendency to be confrontational, to stand up for people. Like when I see someone being bullied, I don't tolerate that. I go and I, and even if it's none of my business, you know, someone at the grocery store and they're like, ma'am, that's none of your business. I'm like, I'm sorry, but you know. And so I think that that was part of the journey. And so when I started searching, I think I started with all of the types, and I we all have a little bit of each type. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I can see that. I can see this. But as I started going into it, I think where it started hitting me a little bit more, you know, home was around the 7 and the 8 and certain qualities that I would see that I was like, well, do I struggle with that? And I think the reason I didn't land on one right away is not because I don't think there was shame or like, I don't want to be mistyped or I don't want to be put in a box is what happens to a lot of people. I think for me, it was more about, I really want to identify with one or another so that I can start digging deeper into that and grow out of that, you know, because I think when I grow, then I can serve everyone around me better. I can be a better friend. I can. So I think a lot of the, like, for example, you were saying Rue is an 8 and, one of the episodes, he was describing a lot of motivations, a lot of things about him. I'm not the,
He's a
sexual 8. Mm-hmm. I'm a social 8, if I am an 8, which I'm pretty sure I am. there was a lot of differences. You know, if I start to identify with something that I'm not, it's like putting on a whole nother personality, you know, that's not true about me. But now that I know, and I think, again, 2s go to, 8s go to 2 in health. Right, and health. I think a lot of the qualities that I was seeing, you even asked me, you said, have you searched into the 2? You should look into the 2. And I did, because I feel like because I had already done a little bit of emotional work, a lot of those qualities, a lot of those serving others and being able to be selfless and just put others' needs above my own, that wasn't something that came easy to me. So when I look back at my life, I'm like, that maybe I was more of an 8, you know?
Yeah.
That's what that journey looked like for me, just reading. If you don't like reading, you can, there's a lot of videos. There's a lot of really great Christian resources that talk about the Enneagram, because I think with the Enneagram, wherever you go with anything, not just with the Enneagram, with the gym, with whatever, In this life, it can be perverted or it can be used for the glory of God. And so I think that I really just did the work in finding Christian resources and finding people like you who could really pour into my life in a productive and fruitful way so that I could land on one and just become, you know, someone better for everyone around me.
Yeah. And I love how you said, I really wanted to know my type. And it's the same reason why I'm so passionate about people finding their correct type. Mm-hmm. I was talking to my friend the other day and I was like, I don't know why. Like sometimes people will come up to me and I won't rest until, like, I'll be working it over and over in my mind. And I can't make the final decision. Nobody can tell you what your type is. But sometimes, you know, the between them telling me a little bit about why they're confused and the things they're thinking on, I'll go home and I'll be like, oh, wait, but that has a line to this and it could have this wing and it could have this. And I'll like, you know, do my Enneagram math and I'll be like, wait, I got to call this person. And I'm so passionate about people knowing their correct number. And here's why. Because some people are like, well, it doesn't really matter if I'm a 7, if I'm an 8, what's the difference? A 7 and an 8 have completely different growth paths.
Right.
You know, a 2 and a 6 can be confused, but they have completely different growth paths. Even a 2 and a 3 that are right next to each other and that have a lot of similarities. If I would have stayed mistaken thinking that I was a 2, right now I'd be doing complete different emotional work. I'd be praying in a different way and I'd be wrong. You know, I'd be addressing problems that maybe aren't even the real problems that God wants me to fix. You know what I mean?
You may have some superficial things. That's like, you have that wing, but they're not the things that were really like hitting home for you.
Yeah, exactly. Like maybe I'd be working on my pride, and it's not to say that I'm the most humble person ever and I don't have pride, but it's not so much the inner pride, but maybe it's the outer over concern with how people see me and how people view me. I have to work on that, you know?
Right.
If you get confused, a lot of people get confused with their growth, you know. So for example, 9s will think that they're 3s, and this is again a problem with the test, because you'll answer the test without knowing. It's unconscious, it's subconscious. You'll answer the test according to who you want to be. So 9s will answer all the 3 questions and then they'll come back and they'll be like, I'm a 3. And the growth path that you're going to get, if you read a book, it's going to tell the 3s to rest. And you being a 9, thinking you're a 3, you're going to say, I got to rest. When really the 9s struggle with slothfulness.
Right.
And they struggle with not having enough activity and not speaking up enough. Me as a 3, I speak up too much and too often, even when it's not my responsibility. So I have to learn to let it go. But you see how somebody could receive the totally wrong message. So I could be a 9 and think, man, I am so healthy. It told me to rest. Then I went home and I rested and I'm completely rested. And even God himself is looking down like, that's not what I want
Girl,
from you.
You need to get to work.
Yeah. Or as a 3, if I confuse myself with a 9, you know, it'll be telling me, do more, keep going, get at it. And I'll be like, yeah, I'm going to do more and burn myself out because I have the wrong number.
Yeah.
So I want to teach the audience a little bit about some of the nuances of the Enneagram. It's not a personality test, so it's not a straightforward answer. There's a lot of, there's Enneagram math, as I call it, like I was talking about. So there are things called wings, lines, and subtypes. Mm-hmm. And depending on your wings, your lines, and your subtypes, every number, like even 6s will look different from each other. 7s will look different from each other. 3s will look different from each other. So first, let's talk about the wings. Your wings can only be, you can only have a wing of a number that is directly next to yours. So me as a 3, I can only have a 2 wing or a 4 wing. If you are in fact an 8, I love your patience and ability. This is one of the reasons I think you're an 8 too. Sorry to tell you here on the podcast in front of everybody. Your ability to wait and not proclaim a number even after 3 years shows me for sure that you're not a 3, but you know, like it's very admirable. Like I admire that, because I would,
you needed to land on a number.
And I'm progressing in that, but yeah, like the fact that it does not bother you at all speaks of like the confidence and the steadiness that a lot of 8s that I know have, you know. Like I am who I am, I haven't decided yet, don't rush me. But anyway, if you are an 8, you can only have the wings 7 or 9.
Right.
And consecutively, if you're a 9, your wings would be an 8 or a 1, because the Enneagram goes in a circle.
Right.
And what your wing is, it is your secondary personality. And you can actually take from both wings. That's why they're called wings. So you can, it means basically that you're that when you are a 3, you will pull from your 2 sometimes. You will pull from your 4 sometimes. And this is something that confuses a lot of people, because they'll be like, I'm a 3, but sometimes I act like a 2.
Mm.
And I'm like, that's okay. That's part of the Enneagram.
Right.
If it's a number, so if you are looking at a number and you're like, I'm not sure what number I am, I'm either this one or that one, but the numbers are close to each other. So like in Dee's case, you could be a 7 wing 8, or you could be an 8 wing 7.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my case, I'm a 3 wing 2. So that's why when I read the 2, it resonated with me. It's still important to find your core number.
Right.
But you don't need to freak out so much if the number that you're confused with is a number right next to yours. Now, what you cannot do, and people have told me this before, they will take a test, and usually the test tells you the 3 most likely Enneagram types.
Okay.
And people think that they can be all of them. So like I said at the beginning, say I'm a two wing five. You cannot be a two wing five. You cannot be a five wing nine. If you find yourself in that kind of situation, then you should look into each number, do some meditation, some introspective thinking. And by the way, we're not talking about new age meditation in case anybody's out there ready to throw those rocks.
Meditate,
we're
literally talking on about the meditating word of the Lord.
Yeah, in the presence of God and prayer. And do some thinking and do some soul searching and pick. Because if the numbers are not by each other, now here's another thing that can happen. You can have lines. So your wings, those speak of your secondary.
Can I say something before you get to the lines? I wanted to add that for the wings, I think one of the hardest reasons it was for me, it's been 3 months, not 3 years.
That's a long time. I thought you were, because you said, okay. I thought you were deciding since you... No, were doing emotional work for 3 years.
Yeah, I was like, man, 3 years? Okay, by that time, you need to decide. If it's been 3 years, you need to land on the number. But for sure, I think that one of the reasons why it was hard for me is because I don't identify with the nine wing as much. I know that when you have more of the nine wing, you can be more of a mediator. And maybe I am. I just don't see it. But I also didn't identify with the six in a lot of ways. So I was like, and that can happen. When you have a wing, you can have a very, very strong wing, which was where I was bouncing back and forth. So I came to Vanya and I told her I'm either a seven with a very, very heavy eight wing or a strong eight wing, or I'm a eight with a very strong seven wing. Mm-hmm. So they are accessible. So if I am an eight, I can borrow from the nine. And you can do that consciously or subconsciously. You can be completely unaware because they're really coping mechanisms that we're using to cope with stress, with life issues, with you know, many things that come up. And so I think that that was one of the hardest reasons is because I borrow from one wing way too much. And once I land on a number, then I can consciously say, okay, these are qualities about the nine.
Yeah, I gotta take care of my other wing. I can pull from my other wing. So I read a book about a nine who hated confrontation so much that he couldn't speak up. He couldn't do it. He was very defeated. And he said, I consciously took from my eight wing. I said, there is eight inside of me. I know it. It's my wing. I'm going to pull my eight out. And that's part of the emotional work that we can do. And I do the same thing with my four. So I'm very, very heavy on the two side. But I realized that the four will bring me more quiet time. The four will bring me more creativity, and the four will bring me more originality, because threes and twos both tend to conform to what people think they should be. As the little pastor's daughter that I am, I'll push myself into the cookie cutter. It's not even people force me to be cookie cutter. I'll be like, look at me. I'm what you guys wanted me to be. But when I pull from my four wing, I'm like, no, feel your feelings, Vane.
Yeah.
Feel your fours, feel their feelings. Threes, suppress their feelings. So I'm learning now, and I've even done a lot of reading, and this is part of the process. So first I read a lot about the three to get to know myself. Then I read a lot about my growth. Mm-hmm. Then I started reading about my stress. Since I'm knowledgeable about those areas now I'm reading about my wings. Mm. So I've studied the two in depth already. Now I'm reading about the four and kind of looking at the four and saying, okay, what can I gain from the four? What do I need to be like this? So those are your wings. You also have lines. So what lines are the numbers you look like in stress and in growth. And basically what that means is, regardless of what number you are, this is kind of common sense, you act differently when you are in a safe environment, when you are with people that you love, that make you feel safe, that make you feel secure. My friend Janessa, she's the one, and we always tell her we love when fun Janessa comes out, because ones go to seven.
Yeah.
And this is, I say this to the audience, and I want to teach you guys this, because I know a lot of people will say, I can't be a seven. Whenever I'm around my family, I'm goofy and I'm spontaneous. And I'm like, okay, but that's around your family.
Right.
You might be a one at your core, and you go to seven as your heart type, and that's great. When fun Janessa comes out, she's silly. She'll put on a costume. She probably doesn't even want me to say this, because fun Janessa only comes out in front of, you know, the right people, and, you know, the people that make her feel safe.
Yeah.
In the same way, so that's, you have a number that you go to in your strength. You have a number, they call it the heart point. You know, when your heart is, and I imagine like a little Jane the Virgin, little glowing heart, you know, when your heart is warm and fuzzy and you feel safe.
Yeah, when you're comfortable.
You're comfortable, you look more like that number.
That's the same thing that happens with my husband because, you know, when I was talking to his family a little bit, his sister and my brother-in-law, and so they're like, yeah, he's a seven, right? And I was like, no, you guys see his seven, but I live with my one, which is very disciplined, very motivated, very, like, things are very black and white. And I love that about him. Those are one of the things that attracted me to him is that he has a lot of qualities that I don't necessarily do naturally. And so I see the one on a date. Monday through Friday, he's a one. On the weekends, he's a seven. And so that can happen, too, is that that's why it's not good for other people to type you. Because then my husband was skeptical. At first he's like, oh, I don't know, and then I start describing him the ones and he's like, yes, those sound like great people. I'm for sure a one.
Those sound like great people.
And so the same thing happened with that.
And so that, I love what you said, don't let people type you because different people bring out different things in you as well. So like my husband is a six and my growth is a six. So not only am I comfortable with him and I love him, but he's also a six. So my conversations between my husband and I might even sound like a six, you know? So if he's typing me, or maybe not him because he sees a lot of me, but let's say if you observe me around Rico a lot, you might even say we're both sixes. And I have a lot of spouses that say that. We're both eights. We're both nines. We're both sixes. And what that's called, by the way, is an overlay. So there are people that you spend a lot of time with that you take on some of their characteristics. We know this. We know that married couples can start looking alike. And, you know, brothers and sisters can start looking alike and things like that. So it doesn't mean that you're that.
Right.
Always try to be introspective enough to know what is you and what are learned behaviors. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, I'm a neat freak. I am very, very neat, orderly. You know, the people who work with me know that if I come in and there's stuff on my desk, I'll be like, who put this on my desk? My desk needs to be clear and beautiful and aesthetically pleasing at all times. But I got that from my mom. Really, that's not necessarily a three thing. That is, it could be a three thing, but I learned it more from my mom, who was a one.
Right.
You know, who said, pick up and keep this like this and keep this like this and keep this like this. And I wasn't like this as a child, which is another tip. Look at, so children haven't developed their wounds yet. So don't look at yourself at 5 years old and try to type yourself. But if you look at yourself fresh out of high school, or if you look at yourself at 17, 18, that's one of the best times to get your type because
the truest type.
You haven't been jaded yet. But you've already received your wound. So 17, 18, 19 is a very good time to like be like, when I was like that, because some people also, you know, they've been through two divorces, had seven kids, they have four grandkids, and they're like, I'm not carefree anymore. And it's like, yeah, you're not anymore. Or I'm not spontaneous anymore. Well, you have five kids. Yeah, you can't be spontaneous. But how were you at your core rather than what were learned behaviors? So those are called overlays. I have a brother who's an eight, so I have an eight overlay. I have, when I'm with my brother, I will fight and argue and because he makes me like that, you know, like, and it's almost like it's like a playful thing, like, you know, like and now we're gonna do this and now we're gonna do that.
To an eight, it's fun, so you're like, this is fun,
have fun too.
So
there's that, and then you have your stress point, which is where you go in stress. It's exactly what you said with the wings. It's a coping mechanism. So threes in stress, for example, we go to nine. And basically in stress, our body tells us, our body and our head and our emotions tell us, you got to slow down, numb the pain, chill, don't care so much. And so in stress, threes will go to nine and become numb. You know, I always tell my team, I say, check on me if I don't have any projects. If I don't have any projects going on, I'm stressed.
I'm in nine mode.
I'm in my nine mode, and my nine mode is, it's not always bad, but it's not me. So help me out. And so you want, that's going to help you when you understand that. I want everyone to understand this because you understand that finding your core type is a little bit more complicated than it seems. Because, people will be like, but, you know, I'm a seven and sometimes I get angry. How could that be? And it's like, well, first of all, you're a human.
Yeah.
And all humans get angry regardless of personality type. But remember that sevens go to one.
Yeah.
And sevens in one get nitpicky. They take on the bad things of the one in stress. They get critical. they get angry. Sevens can become explosively angry. Yet sometimes, because we get caught on those nicknames, and seven is called the entertainer,
right,
we say sevens are laid back and they're funny and they're right. And you only know it's that iceberg.
Yeah.
You know, you only know the tip of the iceberg, and you don't know everything someone's going through inside.
Yeah, and for sure, I think that I love what you said about the iceberg, because we tend to get caught up also in when we say the sin of each type, it doesn't mean that that's the only sin you struggle with.
Yeah.
Like, we all struggle with anger. We all, it just manifests itself in different ways, and we use it as a coping mechanism in different ways. For example, for the nine, they have underlying anger, but they don't always show that. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean that they're not capable. And I think that that's why I love the dynamic of using the Enneagram as a tool in conjunction with prayer, with really asking God questions, because then we get to the root of not just those issues, but other sins that we struggle yeah. with, right? And so it's not about putting ourselves in a box. It's, if anything, about stepping outside of the box and seeing ourselves from a different perspective so that we can become a better version of ourselves, right? Mm-hmm.
And I love that. That's so important. When you are typing yourself, step outside of yourself and look at yourself from the outside.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us are overly compassionate or overly harsh when we're typing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it helps when you are discovering your type to step outside and say, okay, it's not about whether or not I enjoy confrontation. What do other people see of me? And what would I say if I was outside? Maybe not other people, because maybe I'm putting on a facade for other people, but if I look at myself detached from myself, so they mm-hmm. call it detached observation. If I look at myself detached from myself, what's the real reason? Without mm-hmm. any bull, what's the real reason why I'm doing this? You know, so I do get that a lot from eights. Like, but I don't like confrontation. Okay, you might not like it. You're looking at that from an inside. Look from the outside, though, and look at your day. How often do you confront if you need to?
Right.
And then they'll be like, oh, yeah, every 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know? And a lot of times eights, they might, it's not that you like it, but eights use that as a coping mechanism or as a tool to connect. And they don't even realize that. So it's not that they take pleasure in confrontation.
Yeah.
It's that a lot of times they see it as a playful dynamic that helps you to connect. Just like connecting with your kids by throwing the ball might be important to someone, for eights, having a fight might just, or not even a fight, but a debate, a
it's
healthy
like passion.
Debate.
Like, it's, yeah. not, it's not hatefulness, it's passion.
Right, right. And so I think that that's why it's important to be okay with where you are and just trying to move forward in the ways that is the growth lines, you mm-hmm. know, and the what's best for you.
And the another thing I want to talk about is the subtypes.
Mm.
So I heard someone on a podcast once say that once you find your type, it's like you're seeing things. You see things more clearly, but when you find your subtype, you're seeing them in HD.
Wow.
Because every type has three subtypes within it, and those subtypes correspond to your main, your instinctive survival, your dominant instinctive survival mechanism. Mm-hmm. So when we're all growing up, we know that we need to survive. We all want to be safe. We all want to be loved. We all want to, you know, we all want to get along in this world. And so you adapt a survival instinct. And your survival instinct will either be for self-preservation,
mm-hmm.
what's going to keep me safe, what's going to bring me security, or it, and you guys might have heard us say these terms and been like, why do they talk about sex all the time on this podcast? Because it's self-preservation, social, and sexual. And sexual does not refer to sex. But I know that whenever I say it about anyone, like, you know, I'll be like, well, I think you're a sexual eight. And they'll be like, oh, what?
Excuse me?
So the self-preservation is when your main, it means that your dominant instinct is to self-preserve. The social instinct means that your dominant survival instinct is to find safety in a pack.
Right.
It means I want to be one with my pack. I love my people.
Mm-hmm.
I care about influencing people. And in each type, it's going to act itself out in different ways.
Right.
But that's why there's so many more components. There's actually 27 Enneagram types,
right.
Not really nine.
Exactly.
And then the last is the social, is the sexual, which, you know, everybody thinks is funny, but
it's like a one-on-one.
Yeah, sexual simply means I want intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
I desire intimacy with people on a one-on-one. And all these three things are needs that all of us as humans have.
Right.
It's just that we tend to pick one because it's hard to be fully developed, you know,
right.
Hopefully by the time from here to heaven, hopefully we'll become fully mature and developed.
Yeah.
But as humans, we're doing that work and we tend to kind of lean on one a little bit more. So
mm-hmm.
like I'm a self-preservation three. I learned that growing up, I became a three. But as a three, within the three, I'm a three that wants to self-preserve. Right. I'm seeking safety. I'm seeking security. And I'm going to have different characteristics from, let's say, a sexual three, who what they're seeking is a mate, true love. They're seeking, connection. You know, to connect to someone one-on-one. So the next step on your Enneagram journey, once you decide your type or figure out your type, you need to look into the subtype, because that's also going to, and this is why it's important not to type other people, because different subtypes will act very different. So like, for example, we had my husband and Cindy on the podcast, and somebody made a comment. They were like, are you sure they're the same type? Because they're so different. I'm like, yes, mm-hmm. because one is a social six and the other is a sexual six.
Right.
You know?
And what categorizes them in that large cloud, I guess, of being a six is, and as you heard them speak, they were both had the dynamic of being suspicious of people, being mm-hmm. very cautious. But what the subtypes do is that it goes even deeper. Well, for him, his motivation was very different than hers. Yeah. The wound was a little bit different. It manifested itself in a different way, so to speak.
Yeah, something very interesting about my husband at the beginning of learning about the Enneagram, and he even says it on the episode a lot. He says, I don't deal with anxiety. I help other people that deal with anxiety. And that's something very particular to his subtype.
Right.
So there's a subtype of the six that deals with anxiety more openly, and there's a subtype of all sixes deal with anxiety, but there's a subtype of the six that does not recognize their own anxiety.
And afterwards, he said, he's like, I'm not anxious, but I sit by the exit to make sure.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, you know, you are anxious, right? But that's something that he's still growing and recognizing, yeah, yeah. and being able to understand his own anxiety. Mm-hmm. Whereas you could see Cindy, I'm saying like this because she was sitting there. You can see Cindy was like, oh, yeah, I'm anxious all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got anxiety sometimes and I deal with it and I fight it off. And It's a different dynamic, and that's why it's so important to look into your subtype. So we have a very special segment coming up, but before we go there, I just want to take 5 more minutes to talk about common mistypes and misconceptions. Because mm-hmm. It's very important to me that you find your correct Enneagram number. So we tend to think, or these are things I've heard, and chime in anytime if you've heard similar things or, you know, in the conversations we've had with people. People think that anyone who is intense, blunt, or confrontative is automatically an eight. Mm. That is not true. Sixes, eights, and ones share bluntness, intensity, and they can be confrontative depending on their subtype and things like that. And so I'm going to say some of these so that you guys kind of get out of the box. And maybe if you're looking and you're like, the Enneagram's not really doing it for me, it's not, you know, or maybe you're like, I'm an eight. Why are you an eight? Like I've heard people say, well, my husband said I'm an eight, you know, and it's like, no, but
maybe your husband's an eight.
Yeah. So sixes, eights, and ones are very commonly mistyped. Right. Another one that I've seen a lot is twos and nines, because mm-hmm. they're both accommodating. They're both kind. They both tend to be like, whatever you want. But you want to find your right number, because the difference between the twos and the nines is that the twos are giving you what you want because they want to earn your approval and your love. The nines are giving you what you want because they don't know what they want, or because they're literally just like, I don't know. Just don't look at me, you know?
Yeah.
So they're very different, but they can look the same.
Right.
We tend to be like, I'm nice, so I'm a nine.
Yeah. I have a friend who when we were talking about it, and then I like to guess people's types. So I was like, wait, before you tell me, let me guess. I was like, are you a nine? And she's like, no. And she's a five, actually, but she's very introspective. She tends to like her time on her own. She kind of just goes with the flow. But I don't think she goes with the flow accommodating as a nine. I think she just likes to do her own thing, and so in going with everyone, she just stays in her own world. Yeah. And so we were talking about that. I think that's also a common misconception, you know. And we're all going to have characteristics from every type. I think it's just the motivation and you know, specific behaviors for sure.
And that's why you want to look at it like that, through an eye of what's my motivation. Another one I've seen a lot is, I'm laid back and I'm fun, so I'm a seven.
Oh.
That's the biggest one. I don't know where the seven
or I'm
got
funny.
This. Yeah, I'm funny, so I'm a seven.
Yeah, but every like There's funny people within each type of the Enneagram. Every single
type, you know, or
twos that one, are like, very funny, like very, very witty.
Twos are funny. They like to ingratiate themselves with people. They love to win people over. Self-preservation sixes are very funny also because there's security in making other people laugh and making other people joyful. Right. So the point is not are you funny, but it's are you funny searching for security? Are you funny because you're covering up vulnerability like an eight would be? A three would be funny because they're trying to impress you. A seven would be funny because they're trying to avoid, you know, the difficult questions.
Right.
But anybody could be funny. Yeah. Yes. I love that one. And that's super important. And laid back also. So a lot of people say, I'm laid back, so I must be a seven. I've seen nines do that. Like, you're laid back, but nines are also laid back. Yeah. Twos can also be laid back. There are some types that are specifically high strung, like the threes, sevens, and eights. Those are other ones that are mistyped. I've seen a lot of eights mistyped as a three and a lot of threes mistyped as a seven or an eight because of high energy. And the high energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to look into that. And so, yeah, those are just some that I wanted to throw out there. Please feel free to write me with your misconceptions, with your questions. Yeah. Look deeper into this. And as part of that, we have a special segment, I guess, of this show. We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back with a friend of ours named Angie, who is not 100% sure of her type. And we're just going to talk a little bit about what her type could be.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Hey, I'm Vanessa Gracia-Cruz, and I want to let you know if you are planning on writing a book, launching a ministry, building a team, deciding your target market, or simply dealing with emotional things inside yourself, you do not have to do that alone. If you're in search of a mentor, I am this year, for the first time ever, opening up my mentorship program to the public. You can check it out at VanessaGraciaCruz.com. I'd love to coach you. We have programs for 1 week, 1 month, or 90 days, where you and I can make a personalized evaluation, growth plan, list of goals, and whatever you need to get to what you want to do this year. Check it out on my website. I'd love to work with you. All right, everyone, we are back, and we are here with our friend Angie.
Hi, welcome, everybody. Angie. Thank you.
First time on the podcast. Angie is a really good friend of mine. She's a member here of Segadores, of SYA, and a few weeks ago, or like last week, less than 2 weeks ago, Angie hit me up on through my DM and said, wait, Vane, I don't know what I am. I thought I was one thing. People are telling me I'm not this thing. Like, tell us a little bit about what you thought you were, why, and what people started telling you. Because I know you said it was like your sister, your leaders, your friends. What was going on there?
Did you take a test?
Yes. So I did the big boo-boo of getting a test. And when I actually took the test, you know, I took it like as of something that you take, like, you know, those personality tests that you're like, okay, yeah, I must be this. So I took the test and I actually got a 7 wing 6 or something. Like, my 7 and my 6 were pretty strong. So I'm like, okay, so I guess I'm a 7. You know, that's who I am. Cool. Like, you know, I was like, yeah, I enjoy life. That's how I am. Okay, whatever. You know, and I didn't go into it a little bit more. I guess I just dismissed it. I'm like, yeah, that's how I am. And then as I started to, I did this a long time ago. And then recently, actually, like about 2 months ago, I started going to therapy for, you know, different things. So in so therapy, good, as you guys, yes. Yeah, I recommend everybody to.
I have also been to therapy.
Me too.
I say that to break the stigma of, because even when I've gone to therapy, at first, and this is a very three thing, and I'm just going to say this much, very three thing, even on my calendar, because the members of my team see my calendar, I will put it as a doctor's appointment because I was embarrassed. Until one day I was like, wait, if I don't tell people I've been to therapy, then everyone else is going to be embarrassed to go to therapy and nobody's going to go to therapy. So now I say it openly, even as I'm leaving the office. I'm like, bye everyone, I'm going to therapy.
Anybody want to come?
Everybody needs to go there. It's a massage for your soul. Yeah, that's what I call it. But go ahead. So you started going to therapy.
Yeah, so I definitely started to go to therapy. And so in therapy, they make you do a lot of examining of your own life, and, you know, like, why are you doing things the way that you're doing it? Like, let's kind of dig a little deeper. And for a long time, like, I was not digging a little bit deeper. And I was like, oh, you know, God is my healer. Like, you know, like, we have a relationship. I'm good. Like, I don't need any, like, emotional wellness. Like, I think I'm fine. Like, God knows my heart, you know. And then when I started to go to therapy, I realized that I did have a lot of stuff in there, like a lot of baggage. And it was more of an emotional, like, healing that I had to do. So I had to literally examine my heart, like my intentions, you know, with others and things like that. And then in that same line, that's when you started to bring out the podcast. And I was like, okay, well, let me just listen, you know, like while I'm at work or whatever. And I started to listen and I was like, wait, I'm confused, because at first I thought like I was all the numbers. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm literally 1 through 9, like I swear. And then as I started to look a little bit deeper, I started to see, okay, like people are telling me maybe I'm a 2. But when I looked at a 2, I was like, I don't want people to recognize me. Like, that's not why I do things, right? Like, yeah. It's very hard to be honest with yourself when it comes to the ugly things, right? Like, yeah. So it took me a while to say, you know, maybe I am looking at this for recognition because I never had it when I was younger or validation. Yeah. Or maybe I did go through a stressful time where I felt, like, neglected from my parents, not on purpose, just because of everything that they were going through, right? Yeah, yeah, life. Yeah. So that's where I am. I think I'm a 2 wing 3, but I still think that I pulled to a 1. So
what were the things that, when you were thinking of things in the framework or like through the lens of a 7, what were the things that made you relate to 7? Because I feel like 7's one of those numbers that it's almost like on trend or something. At least I see that. Like, everyone wants to be the 7 because I think everyone wants to believe that they're fun-loving and spontaneous. And, right. You know, I've even seen people who are the least fun-loving and spontaneous people I know want to be the 7 because that's what they think they should be, you know, or like, because, I'm joyful, I'm a 7, you know,
or I'm funny, I'm a 7. Exactly. Yeah. And I think they don't realize all the darker qualities of 7.
They like, haven't looked into it.
Yeah. And so
So what made you think you were 7? And I want to really hear, because I know your sister, Karen, is really into the Enneagram, and like you have different friends. I know Michi's into the Enneagram. So like, what are things that they told you when they were like, because I feel like all of them were like, you're not a 7.
Yeah, so it's weird because like I feel like the closer you are to somebody, sometimes it's a little bit more distorted. Like, you're like, wait, is that you? Or is it like, are you another number, you know? Like, so I thought I was a 7 because I love to, you know, be outgoing. I'm very social. Like, my husband's social. Like, we are very, like, social people on the go. Like, oh, whatever. Like, we don't really think about problems too much. We don't want to address them. Which is a bad thing, but, you know, like, that's some of the things that I was like, well, yeah, that sounds like me, you know, and I do care about others. And but when I started to look more into the childhood wound, I was like, well, I never replaced things like the 7. Like, I think if you're not and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's like if you didn't receive attention from your parents or something along those lines, you replaced it with like the fun and like maybe materialistic things and things like that. But I was like, well, that's not me. Like, I didn't really
replace it to an experience. Attention as much, you feel like, is that right? What you're saying?
Like, I didn't do an experience. I didn't do like maybe too many toys. Like, I don't remember like identifying with that aspect of the 7. Right. So I was like, but again, I would validate the 7 by saying, well, I go to stress to 1. So yeah, that's definitely me. Mm-hmm. Or no, I go to the 5 because when I'm chill, like I'm just relaxing. So yeah, definitely I'm a 7.
So. Yeah, and so many people do that, and I mentioned that before, where they lock themselves into a number. And if you really want to make yourself a number, you'll make yourself that number. Like, anything that people say, you'll be like, yeah, I'm a little bit like that, because you're trying to fit yourself into that mold.
Yeah, and because we all have qualities from each number. Like, I can pick things from each number that I have, because we're humans, you know, we all have that in common. So you can definitely make yourself anything if you really believe it, you know?
One thing that I see in you, because we've been friends for a while, and we go on mission trip together and things like that. I was one of the people who I was like, are you sure you're a 7? I never like to straight up tell people, no, you're not, girl. But, you know, I try to lovingly, because one thing I see in you that was very not 7-like is your tendency to prepare and over-prepare, which could look a little bit like the 6, but I see in you that you really think ahead to the future. And you prepare and you really love the work aspect of your life as well. Not that the 7s couldn't, because 7s that love their job are like that. But I saw you so structured and so prepared. Like, Angie was the one person on our missions trip, like, basically saying, all right, guys, well, don't forget your passports. Don't forget this. How many luggages did you guys bring? Does the airline allow for extra luggages? If not, bring cash. We'll give all the cash to Vanessa. And I was like, bro, I have not thought about this. I'm supposed to be leading this thing. Like, I should hand over the reins to Angie. But I could definitely see where what you were doing instead was serving us. So if instead of being seven, you're a two, that's what you were doing. You were recognizing our needs, because what twos do is they foresee a need and they meet your needs.
Yeah.
You know, and they want to help and they want to serve in that way.
So good.
And I think, like, a lot of the times, like, the twos can be misinterpreted, like, wanting to take control. But we're literally like, no, I want to anticipate your needs, so let me help you. Like, I want to, but in a way, like, I do want to take control, because I want to be like, okay, this is what we need to do, you know? And it's very hard for us to kind of let go. And, you know, if people need us, they'll let us know, like, you know?
Yeah. I think one of the things to recognize about each type is that most people have really good motivations at in their heart, you know, like, everybody wants, like, the most best intentions at heart to help others. Like, I know that the ones have a tendency to insert themselves or try to help because they think it's best. And I used to sort of resent that in people, like, I'm okay, or like, you don't know, like, best, or your way is not it. But it's like, when I started realizing through the Enneagram, man, they're just trying to help, they're really doing the loving thing, then I opened myself up to being more receptive of that help, you know? And I think that that's what that does. It's like, it helps us soften up a little bit, that people's motivations are usually well intended.
Did you feel like, were you resistant at all to the two? I've seen people be resistant to the two because they thought it made them weak. Like, I've seen people say, but I'm not a two because I don't let people step all over me. And that's a common misconception, I think, of the two. I think people greatly underestimate twos. They think that twos are like little servants. Like, you know, like, oh, well, they have no opinions and they have no whatever because they're trying to people please. I think twos do want to please others, but they are also very aware of what it takes to please others. And in order to please others, you can't be just a stepping stone, because actually nobody wants to be around that. In order to please others, you have to be dynamic and you have to have a sense of leadership. So I love what you said. People think I'm trying to take control. Trying to take control sometimes is your way of leading and meeting their needs. So I read recently something that I didn't know is that a lot of twos, specifically social twos, become pastors, become CEOs. Wow. They are in high leadership positions. And I love that. And I sent it right away to my friend, because I did have a friend that was like, I can't be a two. I don't want to help everybody. I don't, like, I want to help my people. And that's a big thing of the twos too. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, I do. I do. If it's someone close to me, like, okay, I'm all for it. But if I don't really care about it, I'm like, eh, it's okay.
Yeah.
But most of my time, yeah, like 90%, I would say, yeah, if I'm caring, I'm giving it all. You know, like, I'm all in.
Yeah, the misconception of the two is like, so there's a couple people that I'm like, oh, that person's a two. And they're like, they've never helped me. I'm like, do they know you? Like, they don't walk into a room and shine everybody's shoes. Like, that's just a crazy person. That's not that's not any personality type. That's just weird. I've heard, and you know who I've heard say that a lot? Actually, I'm thinking now, both of those comments were said by eights, which makes sense, because the eight would think, wait, why haven't they helped me specifically if I own this world? But but yeah, so you're pretty settled on the two now. Is that where you are in your journey?
I think so. I still don't know, like, for 100% which wing I'm pulling, just because of the fact that sometimes I pull to the one a lot, but I don't know. I guess we'll find, you know, as I keep working on, you know, I'm finding myself a little bit more and, like, addressing those things. I think it will definitely make it a little bit more clearer, because as I am self-examining myself, I can say, okay, you know, maybe I do have an issue here, or maybe I need to tone it down in this aspect, or maybe I'm pulling to one wing more than the other, and then it makes me, you know, be able to control it.
Like, yeah, and you can land a little bit more on one than the other. And the cool thing about wings is what we were saying earlier is that you can pull from both wings, right? So we typically have one that we use more of a crutch than the other. But we can purposely, like, if you are a two and you set on that, then you can naturally pull to your one. But you can also purposely pull from your three as you learn to use different, you know, coping mechanisms. And one of the things that we were discussing earlier too is that each type can go to, it goes to a another in your line of stress or your line of health, and we can also access that in purposely. You know, you don't have to wait to get stressed to go to your stress number. You can recognize that there is a need. Like, for example, sevens, they go to one in stress. But if you're a seven who's very procrastinator, last minute, you can purposely say, I'm not going to wait till last minute. I'm going to access that one and try to get things done on time and force myself, almost like a little bit of self-stress, to do it in a healthier way, you know. So that, that's also something that we can do.
That's good.
Well, thank you, ladies, so much for being on the podcast. Thank you, Angie, for being vulnerable, and keep us posted on your Enneagram journey. I will say, so now my recommendation for you, next step. So now you think, you know, you've got your core number. I would say read up very in as much detail as you can on both of your wings. And like she said, learn to access your wings. And once you have read up a little bit on that, determine your subtype as well. Actually, I changed my mind. Determine your subtype first and look into your subtype, because there's three different types of twos and they look very different as well. And then you look into your wings, and then you start looking into your strength. And it's like what we've been talking about this whole episode. It's a process. It's a journey. You know, it's not worth it to even begin your Enneagram journey if what you want to do is figure out something in 5 minutes and be done. And I think that's the moral of this whole episode. We're looking to grow. We're looking to get closer to God. We're looking to empathize more with others, get closer to each other, and overall just be emotionally healthy beings. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you did, I'd love it if you shared, comment on the videos on my Instagram, and I want to keep serving you. Let me know if you want more Enneagram episodes, or if you want to talk about some other things. DM me on your topic ideas, and I'd love to read them. See you guys soon.